This is the audio recording for a Trademark Clearinghouse from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Hall 1A.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. My name is Karen Lentz from ICANN. I'd like to welcome everyone to Durban and to the Trademark Clearinghouse session. This is a project that has represented quite a bit of work by the community from the time that it was proposed that we should have a trademark clearinghouse in the new TTLD space to developing what the requirements around these processes should be and building the systems to make it work. So we've got a long time slot today. We have a lot of information to cover. So welcome to everyone. I'd also like to apologize a bit for anybody who, I heard there were some people who showed up at 8 this morning in this room. The session was originally scheduled at 8 a.m. And for only an hour, which we moved earlier this week to try to accommodate the time that we felt it needed to cover all the information that we had to share. So again, apologies to anybody who didn't get that wasn't unaware of the change and showed up here. I would like to introduce the team. We as ICANN are implementing the clearinghouse with some excellent partners, and I'm joined here today on the stage. To my left from ICANN, we have Christine Willett and Gustavo Lozano. To my right, we have Vicky Follens and Jan Korstens from Deloitte. We have Dirk de Bever from IBM, Audrey ten Bookum from IBM, Jan Janssen from CHIP, and Don Fancher of Deloitte. So look forward to having a discussion with you today. What we intend to cover in this section, I will give an update on the project status and timelines. Generally speaking, the Deloitte team will share with you the status of the verification services, which they have up and running. IBM will share with you plans relating to the Sunrise and Claims services, which are in the process of being built currently. And then we have a lot of time expected for questions and answers. So just to review for anyone who might be new to this, what the Trademark Clearinghouse is, it was proposed as a global database to support rights protection, specifically aimed at trademark protection in the new GTLD space. So it is designed as a global repository. It verifies trademark information from rights holders all over the world, maintained in one centralized database. And then that data is used and distributed appropriately to our registries and registrars who are using it during their startup processes to implement the rights protection mechanisms. We get a number of questions here. This graphic is intended to depict the various functions that the clearinghouse is doing, because it does a few different operations and it touches a lot of different parties in the ecosystem. We get a lot of questions around who does what and where should I go for questions about such and such. So we're obviously trying to improve the tools that people have to understand which functions sit where and where to go. But I just wanted to review a little bit here. If you look at the top of the slide here, you have rights holders submitting their trademark data into the clearinghouse, and that happens via the verification service that's currently operated by Deloitte. The database there in the middle is the repository of all of those clearinghouse records. these and going out of the database, the Sunrise and Claim services provide mechanisms to for that data to be obtained by registries and registrars to use as they're starting up their TLDs. So what you see in the middle, that the three pieces there that are bracketed, is generally what's referred to as the trademark clearinghouse. And as you see, it has a few pieces to it. In terms of the timelines and milestones in the project, this is, I think, in line with what's been shared elsewhere during the week. The verification service went live in March. The database API for the trademark database was completed in April. There's a test environment to be available in July. We'll talk a little bit about that. The Sunrise testing and Sunrise production service are anticipated for August, with the claims planned for September. These are I'll come in on this. These are outside dates. What I'm showing here, and as IBM will share, I think they're aiming to reach some of those milestones sooner. In terms of continuing work that surrounds the basic building of the clearinghouse systems, one of the things that we're working on is development of what, for lack of a better word here, is called the Sunrise. I'm calling the Sunrise Portal. In earlier discussions, there was an expressed a suggestion that it would be helpful to have a location to track all of the Sunrise information for all of the various T's that would be going live, potentially a large number launching within a specific period of time. And so there are processes for registries to submit what their startup information will be, what the dates are, what the relevant policies and requirements for the TLD are, where to go for information, et cetera. So we're working on building that tool. We're also working on, have been working on inclusion of previously abused domain labels in the clearinghouse. This is also sometimes referred to as plus 50. And that is the capability for in a case where there has been a decision that a particular domain name was abusively registered or used against a certain particular trademark. So where that trademark record has already been verified by the clearinghouse, and the labels are noted in the decision, can be associated with that specific trademark, then those labels can also be included, associated with the record for the trademark claims service. We posted implementation notes around how that information is verified, what is submitted, and how you would go about associating some of those labels with an existing clearinghouse record. The Deloitte team is actually going to take you through a lot of that today. I also wanted to address the timing on this. I think there was some confusion about some of the discussion about this. I think the confusion is around details of specifically how the system is going to be implemented. I think that we've made a commitment to have this capacity available before anyone is operating a claims period, and I think we still expect to meet that. Another stream of work that's been taking place is around the RPM, that's Rights Protection Mechanism, RPM requirements. That document is intended to fulfill a reference in the registry agreement, which says, registries are required to implement these required Sunrise and trademark claims processes according to blank. So the RPM requirements are intended to, have a place where those parameters are contained. We talked about this in the previous meeting in Beijing. One of the sort of considerations or principles that has been used in that we used in trying to draft the RPM requirements is that the registry operator should have discretion to implement their startup phases, their startup processes in line with their own business model, their own operational model, so long as there's a minimum set of requirements that are met. And so we published a draft version, our first rendition of that before the meeting. We had some discussion about it during Beijing. We've got quite a number of comments. Once after the meeting, we held a conference call, an open conference call with anybody who was interested, who wanted to provide feedback on that document and ask questions and have a discussion. There were, if I remember correctly, about 70 or 80 people on that call, so it was well participated in. And then there's also been a team of community members, applicants, and others who sort of formed themselves as a team that has been in discussions with ICANN on how these RPM requirements can be revised and clarified. So I'll mention some of the topics of feedback that we've received and discussions that we've had. This is not a complete list, but I want to highlight some of the things that came out of this. And a number of them referred to TLDs that had a particular geographic focus or other cases, sometimes a community focus. So the first bullet there has to do with prioritization among trademarks in the Sunrise. The Sunrise is meant to provide a priority period for rights holders to register domain names in the TLD. There were discussions about if a TLD has a particular local or regional or geographic focus, to have the capacity to prioritize in how they allocate among the requests that they get in a Sunrise period. There were some proposed exceptions to the idea of priority for Sunrise. So examples of that were given were, again, in the case of a geographically oriented TLD, things like public institutions or names of public services that might not be a concern in terms of cyber squatting. So there's been some discussion about a procedure where some limited exceptions to the standard Sunrise could be considered and reviewed. We also got feedback around IDN variants in the Sunrise period and how those were treated. Registries now and registries in the future will have IDN variant policies that concern how they bundle or allocate or block different names based on variant characters in a particular script. So the initial version of this document that provided that the registries could continue to implement those policies in their registration processes, but they would need to do it after the Sunrise had concluded. We got a lot of feedback and questions on that, and looked at the issues and considerations there, and the revision of this does permit the registry to continue to apply whatever IDN variant policies it has based on its IDN tables, you know, throughout the sunrise period in terms of the allocation. There was discussion about the 30-day notice of sunrise. So this is a requirement that was agreed on at an earlier point that everybody would give a 30-day notice before a new TLD was doing sunrise registrations. The draft that we published required that notice could happen once a TLD had actually been delegated to the root zone. There was, some proposals to revise that, to make it at an earlier point. Could there be an earlier point where the 30-day notice of sunrise could be given? So that's been discussed with a balancing of, the desire to have certainty and predictability around the dates and when things are happening, with the desire for people to expedite their launch processes. So there's been quite a bit of discussion on that. And the next one, validity periods, had to do with how long certain credentials used in the sunrise and claims processes would be valid. We got a lot of feedback on this, looked at the sort of operational risks and considerations in the process and determined that that there can be more flexibility here, so for the registries and registrars to use their processes. So those validity periods have been eliminated. Finally, there were comments around schedule changes during the startup period. So let's say a registry had announced a sunrise or another period and then needed to adjust, postpone it, or they started it and they wanted to extend it for whatever reason. So we've are in the process of revising the draft to provide more flexibility around how that information can be changed or adjusted as the processes continue. So we have taken the results of those discussions and are working as we speak on a new version that we expect to be posted for public comment. Certainly, it's time is an issue here. So, I would say it's our goal to have it posted within a week, and I hope that you'll all review and comment on that. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Gustavo Lozano here, who's going to talk about the test SMD files. This is something that new that's available this week, and he'll review for you a little bit about what that development is. Thanks.
So basically, we have been working with IBM and Deloitte to generate these test SMDs. Several registries and applicants have been asking for these test SMDs because basically they are very important for you to start doing your integration testing. So it's very important to mention that these files were generated using the same HSMs and the same infrastructure that we're going to use in production. So we have four types of SMDs: active SMDs, revoke SMDs, signed by a revoke TMB validator, and SMDs with invalid signatures. We have provided for the first two types, the active ones and the revoke ones, we have provided data elements in different language, basically those that are listed in the presentation. And we also have IDN labels in the SMDs. We also have provided all this information for you. You can use these files right now. So we have the trust anchor that you need to verify the SMDs, a certificate revocation list, the SMD revocation list, and obviously the link to download the test SMDs. We are also working right now on providing you with a learned interface or a sandbox. So basically you are going to be able to test the upload file of the learned. So this is very important. This is going to help you to implement and integrate your systems for the Sunrise. So if you have any questions, you can send an email to me or you can send an email to the mailing list, and we are going to help you with every question that you have.
Thank you, Gustavo. For those who don't know, can you share what a Lorden is?
Oh, so that is the lost, the list of registered domain names. So basically it's the file that the registry will upload to the trademark database so we can send the notification notice to the holders.
Thank you. I'm going to turn it over next to Jan Korstens, and we'll move into the update from the verification service perspective. Thanks.
Thank you, Kara. Good morning, everybody. On behalf of the Clearinghouse team, I would also like to welcome you all to this session. But I also like to start with thanking a lot of you who have been working closely with us in the last couple of months and have provided us feedback and suggestions. There's a lot of work that we've been doing in the last, say, 4 or 5 months. We have received a lot of cooperation and a lot of feedback from a number of parties, as an example, with respect to how we were going to set up the API and the sessions that we organized around that. Those sessions were very helpful in listening to you and hearing how we could better do what we were doing. And so I can only tell you that we hope to continue working like that, as open as possible, and in implementing based on feedback that we receive from the community. I'm handing it over to Vicky to start the presentation as such.
Good morning, everybody. So we have a couple of things that we want to discuss with you in relation to the Trademark Clearinghouse. In first instance, we just want to touchly brief the verification process and the recorrection process, describe a little bit the common errors we're receiving and what we're doing to enable that those common errors don't happen anymore. Also, a touch point, the trademarks and non-Latin scripts. There's been a lot of confusion in relation to this, so we're going to discuss that. The 50 abused labels, what's new in the clearinghouse, what will be coming soon in the clearinghouse, touch a little bit about customer support, and provide you an overview of some statistics. So in relation to the verification process, it's important to note that we do a 4i review process. What does that mean? It's a manual process. It goes to two groups of verification agents. Group 1 looks at the trademark information. Group 2 looks at the trademark information. And if they both agree to a decision, either it is correct or incorrect, then it either gets that status. When the Group 1 and Group 2 do not agree for some certain areas that they have, there's an inconsistency, it actually goes to a quality assurance group, and they overlook what has been verified, and then they take a decision based on that information. The same goes for proof of use. Proof of use is also looked at twice, and if there's an inconsistent information, then it goes to a quality assurance review group. What do we do? What do we check? We check, of course, that the trademark is indeed registered, that all the information is accurate and complete, and we check to see that you meet the eligibility requirements as laid down in the Trademark Clearinghouse guidelines. What is also important to note is that our verification agents are located all over the world. It's not just Deloitte Belgium that is providing these services. We have resources all over the world, even in Deloitte Belgium. To be honest, our resources just do not exclusively exist out of Belgium nationality. We have a lot of resources within our offices as well. So we do work with our global offices. We do work with local trademark law experts to address questions, to address verifications.
And one of the things to note, too, and you'll see this in some of the statistics when we present them a little bit later, but to this point, probably about 45% of the trademarks that have been put into the clearinghouse are from the U.S., and another 35% or so are coming from primarily Europe. So at this point in time, the bulk of the trademarks being placed into the clearinghouse for verification process are coming from North America or from Europe. And so, as Vicky said, that's where you're finding a lot of the verifications to be done at this point in time. But as you'll also see, we do have marks from over 60 countries at this point, and we are involving our offices around the world and our resources that have the language capabilities and all of the necessary requirements to perform the verification.
Now, my first slide, I said, you know, either a trademark record is verified or it goes to an incorrect status if something is going wrong. So at that moment when a trademark receives an incorrect status, a recorrection process is initiated, meaning you can correct your trademark record. We do not correct anything on the trademark record. It is your responsibility to edit the information. What we do provide you is we have an external comment field, and we actually provide you with the information as to why a trademark record has not been able to be verified. The recorrection process is normally lasts for a period of 20 days, meaning you have normally 20 days to recorrect your trademark record. We have currently not implemented this 20 days because we are working with you to help you and assist you in getting your trademark records verified. We note that especially in the summer months, a lot of people are on vacation, especially also for trademark agents working for trademark holders. They can't always reach their trademark holders and correct the information. So that is why we have not initiated this 20-day period to automatically start. We will be initiating that after the summer, and that means if you do not recorrect your trademark record in 20 days, it will be deemed invalid. And if you want to, at that moment, you'll need to resubmit in order to get a verified trademark record. The reasons that initiate a recorrection process, I'm just going to go over them real quickly, but it's important. These are the reasons why a recorrection process is initiated. So it could be that the name of the mark is incorrect, the registration number was incorrectly provided, the jurisdiction is correct, the name of the holder is correct, or no documentary evidence has been provided. For example, if your name has changed for some reason and you have not been able to notify the trademark office, then you need to provide us with documentary evidence showing that a name change has happened. The address of the holder is incorrect. Again, it could be that your address changed, that you have not notified the trademark office. That is fine, but then you need to provide us with documentary evidence to be able to establish the fact that the address has been changed. The registration date, that is also a reason why a recorrection process is initiated. Description of goods and services. A detailed description of goods and services. So also there, and we'll get into that in a couple of minutes, but these are also reasons that a recorrection process is initiated. Sample of proof of use is insufficient. The declaration of proof of use is not signed, and a copy of the trademark certificate is not provided. We're going to go over these in more detail as to what is going wrong and give you some percentages as to how many of these trademark records go for those reasons are incorrect. So out of the batches of trademark records that come in, about 7% of them actually are incorrect because the name of the mark has been either misspelled or there was a typo. The general rule is it needs to be an exact match as on the trademark certificate. Now, for word marks, that's quite easy, although that we do see that there are holders and agents that actually mistype their trademark. And for example, if your word mark is TMX with a space, then you do not record on the Trademark Clearinghouse that your trademark is TMEX. Why is that? First of all, that is not your trademark. Secondly, if you record it with a space, then you're going to get more protection because you're going to receive the labels TMX and TM-X. So that is why we send them back to holders and agents. The exception, so in the clearinghouse guidelines, we clearly state no trademarks with a dot are allowed. We have noted that this has provided with some complexity and confusions with trademark holders and trademark agents. And we are working with ICANN to be a little more lenient on that specific rule so that we could allow, in some cases, trademarks that qualify, to be accepted in the clearinghouse. We're working on a clear guidelines on that. As soon as we get those approved, we can get them get them in the clearinghouse guidelines. From our point of view, there are some technical implications as well in order to get that done, because at this moment, because dots are not allowed, it is not possible to replace a dot with a hyphen. As soon as we can get that, we will be able to replace the dot with a hyphen. There are trademarks that indicate a source indicator, such as .com, .org, or any other new GTLD extension, will not be accepted in the clearinghouse, so that remains the same. We have trademarks currently in the clearinghouse that were marked as invalid because of the dot rule. We will be contacting those trademark holders and trademark agents to allow them to recorrect or resubmit their trademark without an additional fee as soon as we have clear approved guidelines as to what is accepted and what is not accepted. As for the registration date, so here, again, about 9% of the trademark records that we get in, they fail because the registration date has been incorrectly completed. In most cases, application date is provided. So we request the application date. Application date is not mandatory, you can submit it. We definitely do request, and it is mandatory, is the registration date, but a lot of people get it mixed up as to what is the registration date and what is the application date. The name of the holder, this might be surprising, but 20% of the trademark records actually get also in an incorrect phase because the name of the holder has been incorrectly completed. Or either the name of the holder is correct, but he is not the owner. And there is a field in the clearinghouse or in the interface where you can choose whether you're an owner, a licensee, or assignee. And there sometimes the holder is a licensee. They have provided the licensee declaration that has all been correctly completed, but they forgot to select the type licensee, so they indicate that they are an owner of the trademark, while that is incorrect. So those are also reasons why all this the records are sent back to the holders, to the agents, to correct the information. 22% has failed verification because the address has been was incorrect. As I earlier stated, we understand that companies change address. We understand that it's sometimes time-consuming to get it to the trademark office. We also understand that the trademark office doesn't always update within 24 hours at the moment we do our verification. So in those cases, please submit documentary evidence such as a registration form saying that your company has moved. That is fine. We understand that, and we accept those reasons. We accept those documentary evidence as well. We have also cases where, especially with online databases, that the address of the trademark holder is not always mentioned on the trademark certificate. While we do request the address of the trademark holder to be submitted to the clearinghouse, copy of the company registration form that provides the address is sufficient. Of course, the name of the holder has to be mentioned as well. Or even a print screen of the website can qualify as to an accurate address of the trademark holder. Description of goods and services. So in the clearinghouse, we have two fields. We have a description of goods and services that constitute out of the different niche classifications with a high-level overview of the description of those niche classifications. And then we have a detailed description of goods and services. The detailed description of goods and services, that is what really is on your trademark certificate. As for the description of goods and services, so here you only need to actually select the number that corresponds with your trademark record, or that is on your trademark record. We have actually a mistake ratio of 8%. In most cases, it's because numbers of niche classifications are selected while the trademark is registered in a jurisdiction that does not follow the NIST classification. We have an extra field under that box that says non-applicable. If your trademark is registered in a jurisdiction that does not qualify under the NIST classification, then you need to select non-applicable. For API users, the value is 46. So again, and there is a list on our website as to which jurisdictions fall under NIST classifications, which do not. So we provide this information, but we do note that a lot of information is not being read at this current moment. Detailed description of goods and services. Here again, we have an error rate of 14%, so it's quite high, especially if you think that you just need to copy-paste what is on the trademark certificate into the database, and that is still 14% incorrect. For U.S. trademarks, we understand that this happens because on U.S. trademark certificates, sometimes goods and services are provided between brackets. And all the goods and services that are provided between brackets actually mean that the trademark is no longer protected in those goods and services. So although at that moment a lot of people copy-paste that information, actually everything between brackets should be omitted from the clearinghouse record because otherwise we will give incorrect information to a domain name applicant during trademark claims notifications. For other reasons, for goods and detailed description of goods and services is because the trademark certificate is in another language than an English language. We actually ask you to provide the detailed description of goods and services in the language as on the trademark certificate. So if, for example, trademark coming from Spain, all the information is provided in Spanish. For the description of goods and services, we request to provide that information in Spanish. If you want to provide it in English, that's not a problem, but then we need a certified translation that the information has been translated. The proof of use sample and declaration, you see here 50% has been marked as incorrect. We do believe that this is due to the fact that this is completely new. Proof of use was not always a requirement in previous sunrises. Also, the requirements around proof of use and the sample is new. So we understand that the ratio is quite high there. We have a brochure on our website explaining what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, how to submit the declaration. Again, we're trying to get these errors out as much as we can. We try to assist all the clients through webinars, providing more information about the proof of use sample. What is important, and when we talk about the use of sample, is that the name of the trademark, as it appears on the trademark certificate, needs to be in the proof of use. So we see a lot of times that, for example, trademarks are, there's trademark registered with an accent, but the proof of use, they provide it without an accent. That does not qualify as demonstrating that you are actually using the mark. So it needs to be an exact match as to on your trademark certificate. We also see some samples of invoices. Invoices, again, does not show that you use your trademark. Invoices are a way to send or bill a customer, but that is not actually showing that you are providing goods and services on the market. Print screens with just the trademark and the URL is not accepted, so we also have a lot of examples where they provide a website where it's just mentioned the URL, the trademark, but there's nothing mentioned on the website as such about the trademark. That does not qualify as a sufficient sample of proof of use. What does qualify, a print screen of the website does qualify if you can demonstrate on your website that you are actually using your trademark. And even in some cases, when we have doubts, we will actually go and look on the website ourselves and see if we can find more ways that you are using your trademark. And if we still have a hesitation, we can ask you to provide additional samples of use as well.
One thing to note, too, for you mathematicians out there, if you've been adding up the different percentages, yes, it does add up to greater than 100% because, unfortunately, on some of the records, we're finding, obviously, more than one mistake. So that would be the reason for that.
Yes, that is correct, unfortunately. And for the declaration of proof of use, so again, this is also something new. We understand that this provides some more administrative burdensome, but just a quick update, the name of the submitting party is the name of the holder, so it needs to exactly match the name of the holder as recorded on the trademark record, and it needs to be duly signed and dated. We also advise everybody to use the TMCH standard declaration. We have all had some clients who provide a completely other declaration that does not qualify. So we have put that information out there. It's a downloadable form. You just need to complete it, sign it, date it, and submit it. It's normally pretty easy to use. And then copy of the trademark certificate is not provided. That is that's the last common error that we're seeing. So you see we have quite a lot of common errors. On our website, there is a list of all the countries or jurisdictions where official online databases are available. We also list the countries where there's no official online database available, where we request you to submit the trademark certificate. Nevertheless, holders and agents just submit the trademark record without looking at that list. So the information is out there, and it's quite easy to find under our help section, downloads, online databases, and it's right there, and you automatically know, do I need to submit a copy of the trademark certificate? If you need to submit a copy of a trademark certificate, then of course you need to do that. Otherwise, it will be marked as incorrect, and we will request you once again to submit the copy of the trademark certificate.
Vicky, I'd like to add something to that. So if you look at these percentages, we are not happy with them either. They're quite high. They're much higher than what we had in the past when we helped out with a couple of other sunrises and where we were able to get it below 1%, the error rate. That is also why we have put in place this recorrection process. It was foreseen to do this one time per record. We've now done this multiple times to help you out. We've seen that with most of you it does help because the error rate then gets lower. There is only one side remark. I mean, the closer we get to the first sunrise, we might not have the time anymore to do this multiple times. It was not required, and we're doing this to help you because we really believe that the quality of what you provide is important, and the higher the quality, the more trademarks you will be able to protect. So please take that into account that by the time we run into September and the volume gets higher, we might not be able to help you multiple times per record. That just might not be possible.
And then following the next topic, there has been a lot of confusion or a lot of rumors that the Trademark Clearinghouse does not accept non-Latin trademarks. I can definitely say and very, very positively say we do accept IDNs, we do accept trademarks in a non-Latin script. So no matter the country, no matter the script, the clearinghouse does accept all these trademarks. Currently, we have about 150 trademarks in non-Latin script. We are aware of the fact that this number is very low. We believe that this is caused by the fact that those rumors have been spread out. And we are also very closely working with our PR offices and our trademark agents to help us out in getting the information across, and especially in the Chinese region and the Middle East region as well, so that the people are aware of the Trademark Clearinghouse and that they are aware of the fact that we are accepting non-Latin scripts. But we have no issues in accepting those and no issues in verifying those trademarks. We have also understood from some agents that they have sometimes issues in setting or in putting the trademark actually in an A label. So as you know, the Trademark Clearinghouse, if you go through the web interface, the labels that are generated on the basis of your mark are done automatically. Agents that are working through the API, this is not done automatically. And some of the agents have some hard times in putting that together. So we have actually, as of last week, Friday, put a URL in production where you can easily put your trademark in an IDN formats, and it will provide you the PUNI code so that you're able to submit that to the clearinghouse through the API. Our website has not been updated yet to provide this information, but that will definitely happen soon. But as I said, it was only in production last Friday, and we're currently here, so we haven't had time to provide the updates on our website. Following to the next topic, the 50 abused or previous abused labels, UDRP, court case, Strawman model, there are currently a lot of names out there what this is about. So no matter what the name is, I will provide you with some information as how this is going to be set up. First of all, any 50 abused or previous abused labels can only be added to a trademark record that has been verified. Why is that? First of all, the labels are only considered for trademark claims notifications. So we don't want to uphold the eligibility to participate in a sunrise because we're still verifying these labels or the UDRP or court cases. Secondly, that also allows all the trademarks that are currently in the Trademark Clearinghouse to easily facilitate uploading the information that is necessary to verify and get these labels in there and to get their protection. There's a maximum of 50 labels per trademark record, but that does not mean that that you can only upload one court case or one UDRP case. So you can upload multiple court cases, you can upload multiple UDRP cases to one trademark, but there is a limit that you can only add up to 50 labels. So you can perfectly have 25 cases with two labels against those cases. That is not an issue at all. For UDRP cases or decisions, it needs to be an ICANN approved service provider. So there is a limited list as to which UDRP providers you can actually, or the decisions from the UDRP providers. And for court cases, it's the national court case that will be accepted. So again, no state cases or state court decisions will be accepted in the clearinghouse for these particular reasons. We've tried to make it as simple as possible to limit the information that you need to provide and also to limit the error rate that will happen based on our previous experience. So for UDRP cases, what do you need to provide to the Trademark Clearinghouse? You'll need to provide the name of the service provider, the number of the UDRP case or the reference number of the UDRP case, the language of the UDRP case, and the labels. As for the language, this is new. Why is that? Because we understand that some UDRP providers might provide the information other than English or common or another script or language. We just want to facilitate the verification as well so that it goes directly to the correct language skills that can verify that information so that we don't have to lose time as first checking the document and then notifying that it needs to go to somewhere to someone else. So that's the reason why we ask for the language of the UDRP case. For court cases, it's a little different because for court cases, in principle, there are no real online databases available. So there, as the name of the court needs to be provided, reference number of the court's decision, again, the language for the same reasons as the UDRP case, but here we ask you to provide us a copy of the court case, and you also need to submit the labels as to what you want to receive the trademark claims notifications on. How will the verification process work? Well, of course, we have the general verification. We're going to check to see that your UDRP case is indeed or the service provider or the court name is correct and that the reference number is correct. What do we check when we check the UDRP case or court decision? We check to make sure that the name of the mark in the decision matches the name of the mark as provided on your trademark record. We also check the registration number or reference number in the decision against what is provided on the trademark record. And we check the jurisdiction or the country of protection in the trademark record, and that also needs to match. Those three items need to match before you can actually get a verified UDRP or court case, and we're going to check, of course, that the labels are indeed mentioned in the case as well. important to note, this is something that is going to only happen one time, so this is not a re-verification. So once it has been verified, it is good to go.
Pricing. We've been struggling a bit with trying to find a right pricing for this. If you think about what we have to do, as Vicky mentioned, we have to do one verification. I mean, a UDRP case, in principle, doesn't change anymore, so you wouldn't have to do a yearly validation of that. That's why we had suggested here to have a one-time validation price per UDRP case, $50 to $75, and after that, the UDRP case being validated could remain active for an indefinite time. Then obviously per UDRP case, you have one or multiple labels. For those labels, you get yearly services, you get yearly, claim services. So that's where we suggested to, on top of this one-time validation price, we would charge a $1 per label per year. For court cases where we have much more to read and review, we're currently thinking of $150 to $200. Now, this is what we will like to do, but this is not carved in stone. So our question to the community, and specifically the IP community, is let's go into a discussion about this, not very long, of course, but at least provide us your feedback. Give us an idea on whether or not you think this is logical or not, and then we'll see to which extent we can actually fine-tune this. As you see, most of the prices are related to the actual validation that you need to do, but again, we want to go into a discussion on this.
I'm going to speed up a little bit because I want to give IBM sufficient time to go over their slides. But just to give you an update, there are a lot of things that we are currently working on. What has been just recently implemented is the full-blown API test environment for the agents. Weekly notifications are sent out to trademark holders and trademark agents as soon as the trademark record changes status. We have test SMD files have been made available, and we've been putting together monthly webinars, newsletters, and our animations of the Trademark Clearinghouse has been made available in more than 10 languages now. We have other things coming up. Proof of use to be uploaded as a separate document so that you can, even if your proof of use, if your trademark record is correct and your proof of use is invalid, you'll be able to upload that separately and go through a recorrection process as well. The SMD file will be made available at the end of July. We still need to implement the 50 abused labels or the Strawman model and a couple of other things like transfer of trademark records, updating clearinghouse guidelines. So we still have some things to do. Customer support, just a quick reminder, if you're a registered user, meaning you're an agent or holder, please use the customer support through our web interface. It's easy to use. There's a memo on this as well. For non-registered trademark users, just go to ask a general query through our website. Yeah, I'm going to move that. Just one important note before we go over to statistics. Just a quick reminder, early bird registration is happening now, so you are getting your discounts and your trademark record will be. Even if you register now, your trademark period or your validity period will only start as of the first TTLD happening.
So we wanted to end our part of the presentation with a few numbers so that you have an idea what is currently in the Trademark Clearinghouse. As you can see here, the number of holders that we currently have is around 800. We have 132 agents. We have 5,900 records representing 62 jurisdictions. And these 5,900 records currently present 11,700 labels. As you remember, there were set up some specifics for the special characters and how to translate those. And that is the reason why, obviously, you have more labels than you have more records at this moment. These are the top countries. Yeah, U.S. by far number one. Again, does it say a lot at this moment? No, I know we are only having over 5,000 records. It just gives you an idea where we are at this moment. So the top 10 currently is U.S., France, Great Britain, Switzerland, Spain, Germany, Sweden, Canada, Japan, and Australia. Let's move to the next one. Yeah, and you see that there are quite a number of countries that have shot in things already. Voilà, the website, how to connect with us. Vicky, do you want to quickly go over that?
Yeah, the website, I think everybody knows, at least in the room, knows our website. We are actively on our Twitter account as well, so that's at TMCHinfo. We provide you with news updates there and some general questions that we receive through our customer support. And I kindly invite you, if you have more questions about what we just said or other questions, please come see us at the booth. We're at the hall, so yeah, please come.
Thank you, Jan and Vicky and Don. I'm going to turn it over now to Derek and Audrey for the next portion. Thanks.
Good morning. Name is Derek de Bever for IBM. So an update on the Sunrise and claims. I'm not going to spend too much time on this picture. I think Karen re-explained it in detail at the start of the presentation today. Construct that we have combining the trademark, clearinghouse, the database in the middle, Sunrise and claim services, which we're going to go into some more detail. Next point, please, Karen. Okay. The setup that we have is already a picture that we've shown when in Beijing. It's a triple data center setup with a central data center in Luxembourg. Can you just click once more, Karen, please? Okay. Central data center in Luxembourg. And two other data centers. We didn't have the names already known last time, but one is going to be in Singapore, and the next one is in Denver. It's a high availability setup with load balancing designed to provide maximum performance to the communities. In Poland, and that's the orange star that you'll see, we'll have a call center providing all service desk-related services from a technology perspective to the community. Yeah. What we have on the agenda today, I'll quickly go over the status and timeline for Sunrise and Claim Services, and then Adri and Jan will take you to the sandbox environment, the Sunrise and Claims process as a refresher, documentation, customer support, and further communication following the Durban conference. So the status and timeline, where are we on the Sunrise and Claim Services? Sunrise, the go-live, as already announced during some meetings prior to this one, go-live for the Sunrise is confirmed for August 9. So a few more weeks of patience there. The testing environment will be made available. This is not the sandbox. This is the operational test and evaluation platform for the Sunrise services. So the testing environment will be made available on July 31st. Claims go live 1 month, exactly 1 month later, September 9, and the testing environment for claims as of August 21st. So where are we today? As said, and Adri is going to touch on that later in the presentation, the sandbox is operational, and details on how to connect to that will follow. The Sunrise production and the operational test and evaluation platform enters, and it should actually read entered, 2 weeks ago, the performance and security tests. So start of the month, we started to test this environment. And then the claims platform tests are also about to start. This, again, is a foil that we presented in Beijing, just to give you an update and a slightly modified version of where we are today. Yeah, so Sunrise and Claims is behind us, the setup of the infrastructure with the central database or the central infrastructure rather in Luxembourg has been finalized. Then on the next bit, which is the application development and the testing for Sunrise, you'll see that The two application releases have been stretched, which is a result of changing minor or major changes to the requirements, which has put us at start of this month with a application release 2. Testing has started at the start of the month, and then, as I said, we've got the ongoing performance and security testing of the production in the operational test and evaluation environment. Again, the date that we've discussed before, the beta testing for the registries will start end of this month on the 31st. The green bar with the go-live of the Sunrise is the one that remained in place where it was, and you'll see that we're at the end of the period that had been communicated earlier on August 9. The claim services. So again, our team testing is ongoing at this stage. Again, we're starting the performance and security testing start of August, and then the beta testing for the registrars, as already communicated, will start on August 21st. Until then, and that is, again, what Adri will discuss on the sandbox, until then, until we get to these dates, the sandbox will be in place as soon as we go into the testing of the operational tests and evaluation environment. The sandbox will be made redundant. The go-live claims period that we'd announced in Beijing in August, we are at the very end, and a couple of days after that very end with September 9.
Okay, thank you, dear. Good morning. My name is Adrie ten Bokum, and I just want to quickly go over to the sandbox environment. Gustavo has mentioned that already. Right now, the sandbox environment, which we have put in place to support all of you with the preliminary testing of all the communication towards the platform, is up and running, and it's reachable on the URL which we put out here. The actual connectivity will be communicated by Gustavo, and as we said before, just reach out to him in order to get that access. As Derek mentioned, the sandbox environment will be available up until the actual operations test and evaluation platform will go live. That will be on or before the go-live of Sunrise. So from that moment onwards, you will have the ability to test in the OT&E platform full swing, where the sandbox environment will give you still very, very limited possibilities. It will verify for you the Lord N files, as Gustavo explained, and it gives you all the feedback normally during the upload, which you normally expect from a system to respond to you if things are not in order.
Audrey, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Sorry.
I see in the pod that the remote users cannot hear you. Could you speak closer to the microphone?
Yes. Okay, no problem. I hope this is better for the community. So from that point of view, the documentation will also be handed out, will be available to you, how to connect and how to access. So that's for the Sunrise and claims.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Karen. Jan Jans here. I would quickly like to go over the Sunrise and claims process with you. We had a lot of questions about this. Going back pretty much about 1 year, Deloitte invited registries and registrars to Brussels to have a little conference on talking about Sunrise and claims. We were introduced to the community consensus model by Chris and Jeff. Thank you. There was a bit of back and forth between ICANN and the community. And Gustavo, thank you, Gustavo, introduced us to a specification of what the Sunrise and the claims flow should actually be. This was documented on the IETF site, and you can find the URL on the slide here. For all registries and registrars involved here, I recommend to read this. This tells you all the nitty-gritty details that you need to implement this process. I'll be just scratching the surface here and briefly introducing you to it, because I think a lot of abbreviations have been used here, and I just like to explain what these are. So let's have a look at the Sunrise process for starters. Thank you, Karen. The Sunrise process starts off with a mark holder actually having registered a mark, and that has been verified by Deloitte, as we heard earlier by Vicky, producing signed mark data, an SMD file, as we call it. This SMD file can be introduced by the registrar to the registry. The registrar can verify the contents of this SMD file. It's structured in such a way that it can be verified offline. So at all points in time, a registrar can verify if the content in there is correct and if this SMD file is valid. If that's the case, he can send it to the registry. The registry will take the SMD file as well and will verify actually four different things to see if he can register the domain name for the registrant that provided this SMD file. He will check the label in there. Is the label actually in that SMD file? Is this a valid SMD file? Meaning, does the signature in there, does that match? Is this SMD file still valid in time? So there is timestamps in there. And last but not least, is this SMD file not on a revocation list? Yeah. Gustavo earlier said that this revocation list is available for testing purposes. So from a point of view of the registry, you can start implementing Sunrise process up until this point. So you have SMD files that are available that you can use to start building with and start building your software against. You have a revocation list that you can verify these SMD files against. Third thing, if these four tests flag that this domain name can be registered, this label can be registered in the GTLD, the registry can go ahead and he has to actually notify the trademark clearinghouse again to say, okay, this label has been registered using a LORDEN file, list of registered domain names. So that file goes back to the trademark clearinghouse, and the trademark clearinghouse will eventually send out notifications to the holders of the marks that are linked to those labels. Basically, that's the claims process. I know this slide has been shown you many times, but I just wanted to go over it quickly. Sunrise is slightly more complicated. Yes, Karen, thank you. Claims is a little more complicated because there actually we go up and down the tree twice. So at a certain point, a registrant wants to register a domain name. He goes to his registrar, says, look, I want to register this domain name. The first thing the registrar does is verify if the label is still free. So he goes to the registry, asks, is this label still free? If the label is still free, the registry comes back to the registrar and says, yes, it's still free, but be warned, there is some specialty with this. And you get a URL back from your registry that allows you to get all the claims information that is linked to this label from the trademark clearinghouse. This is called the CNIS service. So you'll get a little XML document. These are static files, actually, on a server somewhere, so you can just pick them up there. And you have to visualize this to the registrant. The registrant has to confirm that, based on the information that is visualized in front of him, that he still wants to continue the registration. Goes back to the registrar. The registrar says, okay, look, this registrant still wants to register the domain name. And he informs the registry of the fact that the registrant has read this claims notification and he still wants to proceed. The registry will then register domain name, and using the same LORDEN principle as was discussed earlier, will introduce the fact that the label was registered into the trademark clearinghouse. Trademark clearinghouse will again notify the mark owner. So these are the two processes that are in place. How does the registry know which information has to pass to the registrar? There is a domain name label list available for the registry in the claims process that the registry can download, which will actually tell them which labels have a tag on it and what the URL is where the CNIS file can be retrieved. That's pretty much the two processes that that I wanted to describe. Thank you.
Okay, so information, as Jan explained, for these processes are out, so be encouraged to have a look at it, read it, and make sure that you're familiar with it. Furthermore, on the Sunrise and Claims infrastructure, we will provide user manuals to the community. Those will be available in both HTML web format as well as in PDF formats, and they will be for each and every environment. It will not be a duplicate of the information which is already there. It will reference it, so you can use both in combination. Each user manual will have a section with Q&As in there, which will be giving you more background if you have certain common questions, and provide you answers on that. So from that point of view, the sections will come on the websites. For Sunrise and Claims, the first release documentation is available, and all the others will come very soon. So from that point of view, you can read those documents already if needed. If there are any questions, you can direct them, obviously, to us. Next one, please. Okay. Dirk was mentioning also the support desk we provide for Sunrise and Claims infrastructures. It's not just only the Sunrise and Claims part, right? It's the complete infrastructure you're going to use for the Trademark Clearinghouse, and that constitutes parts from ICANN, from the validation provider in Deloitte in this case, and from IBM. And they each will work on their own entity, obviously, where we try to align the desks and make sure that we all know how to communicate with each other. How to communicate with each other. We still have our own duties and obligations. So ICANN is for all GTD questions, non-technical, non-mark validation and registration related questions. Obviously Deloitte, as Vicky's mentioned, there is for all the trademark clearinghouse marks validation and registration questions. And IBM for all the technical questions related to Sunrise and claims infrastructure. Again, all the desks work independently, but we try to synchronize and make sure that if you direct your question to the wrong desk, that we try to inform you and give you some advices on where to go. And we are working currently together to make sure that these processes are in line and that we inform one and each other of the desks as well to ensure that you get the best support as possible. Together with ICANN, we are currently working on a onboarding welcomes package for Sunrise and Claims, where instructions will be given how to register and how to obtain support, and also from the IBM side. As you can imagine, IBM is a large organization. We do have some procedures to make sure that our desks are not flooded. So you have to register yourself onto an IBM website prior getting support. That is all documented and will be documented in the onboarding package, so that there's no question there how to do that. We will provide a self-service portal and a service desk with a phone number, so we encourage everyone to try to use as much as you can the self-service portal, but obviously if you cannot get the right answers, you are free to give us a call if you have been registered, and we will provide you the support needed as good as we can. We have try to give everyone as much flexibility as we know that it's not just one person in each organization who can and who will handle all the issues. There's no one who's be available 7/24. So we provide for each and every organization a maximum of up to 5 persons who can register themselves onto the IBM website. That is our preference. If you have less, that's okay. Hopefully, we will not get flooded with questions to make 10 or 20 persons register. Okay. Last but not least, we are currently working to make sure that you get all the information centrally available. So you don't have to search the internet on where do I get the support. So we're working currently with ICANN and with Deloitte to make sure that the information gets available, all the links on one or two web pages, what we will provide you the link for later on. It's not there yet, so we're working very hard on that. But we will get there and make sure that that's on a very friendly location where you can do put your questions out. Okay, self-service portal, just to give you a flavor, as Derek said, 7x24 available out of Poland. All the support will be in English, so please provide your questions in English also on the web portal. You will see here already the contact details, a number out of Belgium, a number in Poland, the mail address and the URL for the self-service portal. You see on the left-hand side the login page. If you have registered yourself at the IBM website, you've been provided with a username and password, and that's where you can use it to log in. It will provide you with a service request screen later on, once you have logged in, where you can, normally it will pop up all your credentials already, which the system knows, which is unknown. We ask you to fill in and make sure that your question is being put out very clearly so we can follow up very thoroughly. Okay. Communication. We had a lot of discussions and heard a lot of discussions over the past days in several sessions. We will offer webinars to the community, which will have a predefined part for the first couple of sessions, and obviously a Q&A part, and then we will allow you to submit questions on forehand, which we can answer during those sessions. If the layout of the webinars needs to change, then we obviously are open to discuss and feed us with information so that we can support you as good as we can and give you the ability to use the system as quickly as possible. We plan to have the first webinar in the first week of August, and then communication will come out very soon on that part. So look out for that on mainly the ICANN website so that you are ensured that you are updated on that. Also, yesterday I overheard a couple of sessions where there were a lot of discussions on communication between registries, registrars and IBM. There was one question whether we could do additional webinars there. We will review that over the next days and make sure that we come back to that as a potential supplement to the webinars so that we get an interaction between each other and hopefully enlarge the experience and get the system up and running as good as we can. Also, a suggestion came out to do some PlugFest sessions. We have not yet defined how to do that, what to do it, and if we're going to do it, it's something we need to discuss with ICANN. We will seriously consider it to ensure to support you with getting up your systems up and running as quickly as possible, so that we shorten all the timelines of development of the back-end systems. So we will come back to that as soon as we can on that part, and we will communicate that to you all later on. Derek, you had some additional things.
Do you want to finish this one?
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Kevin, for reminding me. Yes, the upcoming webinars, we had a slide on that part as well. We are currently planning to do one webinar a week. We like to do every 2 weeks set up another webinar. We will start off with the general Sunrise and claims information, and then we'll go slowly into some what we call masterclass sessions on the different topics from Sunrise to claims. And further on, we all can together, as I said before, discuss on yeah, what you want to see in the webinars. And if you don't have any topics, we will obviously try to bring up topics ourselves and probably repeat these sessions as well, because I can imagine that a new registries and registrars will come on board and they want to have some the same information we have provided already earlier. and we try to balance every other week the timing of the webinars also so that people around the world in different time zones can decently attend the webinars. Obviously, we cannot accommodate all the time zones, but we try to balance that as good as we can so that you are early in the morning or late in the evening or somewhere in the middle of the day, you can attend the webinars. Thank you.
Just the last comment that you saw on the foil that Adri discussed and spoke to on communications, we've added two elements that weren't on the foil at the start of the session. One is the interactive sessions to enable and facilitate a very open, direct, and bidirectional communication between IBM on the one end and registries, registrars, back-end operators on the other. Second, the plugfest. It's just ideas and suggestions that were made to us during this conference. If there's any other thoughts, we obviously welcome them, and we're more than willing to, as long as it's feasible and doesn't get the project in the way, more than willing to consider and facilitate, if at all possible. We'll be, for the remainder of the conference, together with Deloitte and Chip at the Trademark Clearinghouse booth, so feel free to address any questions to us directly. Thank you.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you, Audrey and Jan. We've covered a lot of topics. I expect there are a lot of questions. So the microphone is open for any of those. We'll try to alternate between the questions in the room and the remote questions. I'm assuming we have some. Many. Okay. So let's get started. Amadeu? Oh.
Pretend in the microphone, but there's a first anti-Amadeo measure that you tried this meeting. Thanks a lot. I have some questions, one from IBM, one from Deloitte, one comment to ICANN, and one general request to all of you. I start with a general request.
Amadeo?
Yes?
Since we have a limited amount of time,
yes.
Could I suggest that we limit it to one question so we can get through the queue? So start with one question, and then you can get back in line until we have to cut off the line. Is that okay with you, Karen?
I guess that's a yes. Regarding the question, everybody but Vicky said something about testing and when the testing is available. And I got that the SMD files are available, and some other things will be soon or in July. Can you clarify for me, for registries and registrars, when the complete sandbox environment is available for testing? Because I got lost. I think that you mentioned different things, but I haven't got the concrete details.
Yeah, the complete both production and the operational test and evaluation environment for Sunrise will be available on July 31st.
Okay, thanks.
Welcome.
There were 17 questions in the queue, and they're in order of how the presentations went. So the very first one was, is it possible to insert a list of strings, let's say wine geographical indication as an example here, in the Trademark Clearinghouse and offer a special procedure to unlock the names?
Thanks, Carol, for the question, or thank you, remote participant, for the question. As I understand it, the question is around, is it possible to create a facility or a procedure where geographic indicators or other types of items like that could be deposited in the clearinghouse with relation to some type of procedure for either blocking or registering those names. We don't have that currently. That hasn't been discussed as a functionality for the Trademark Clearinghouse. It's something that could be considered in the future if it was agreed and developed.
Great. I'm just going to ask the next one because it's a short question. It's from Tobias. When will Trademark Plus 50 be ready?
Yeah, so at the beginning I mentioned that we don't have the specific date, but that we will have that ready, expect to have that ready before any of the registries are offering a claims period. So, next.
Hi, my name is Yoshi Murakami of Brides Consulting in Japan. We recently got a brochure from CONAC, and says CoNAC is approved organization by ICANN, and also Trademark Information Exchange System, which is TMCH, is approved by ICANN, and they are the only one, they are the unique organization that can register simplified and traditional Chinese trademark onto TMCH they provide. And we actually confused this is whether true or not, and I was wondering if you're aware of this.
Thank you. So currently, as I described at the beginning of the session, the clearinghouse has a few different functions. One of those is the validation function for how trademarks are submitted by rights holders and how they're verified before being included in the database. Our verification service provider for that function is Deloitte, the team that you see sitting here. We currently have not approved any other validation providers for the Trademark Clearinghouse at this time.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Rubinsky from .br. It's a question for Deloitte. Deloitte mentioned in their presentation that UGRP procedures from ICANN and accredited UGRP providers would be accepted as proof in a trademark plus 15 claim service. I would like to ask if that extends to CCTLD disputes, which are done sometimes by providers that are also ICANN accredited dispute resolution providers.
Thank you, Rubens. You directed it to Deloitte, but I'll answer it and let Vicky add something if she wishes. So the question was for in terms of documenting a label as having been previously abused according to some decision proceeding. Currently, that extends to the UDRP, which is applicable to all names in the GTLD space and to decisions that have been rendered by a court in a particular jurisdiction. We haven't extended that to beyond that to processes that several CCTLDs have that are similar for arbitrating those types of disputes. There are, as far as I understand, several of them, and I think we would need to look more closely at what the range of all of those was to consider whether they would be appropriate for the GTLD space and for the abuse labels.
Thank you, Karen.
The next one is from Connie Hone, a remote participant. Question one. According to Specification 7 of the Applicant Guidebook, all new GTLD registries are required to set up a working arrangement with the Trademark Clearinghouse in providing registrations for trademark domains during sunrise periods. For registries operating closed TLDs that are not going to offer registration services to the public and are only registering domains during sunrise periods for their own use, are they still subject to uphold this arrangement with the Trademark Clearinghouse?
Thank you. Currently, the Specification 7 in the registry agreement is applicable to all GTLD registries who sign that agreement. The rights protection mechanisms of Sunrise and trademark claims were agreed through the development of the new GTLD program as minimums that we wanted to ensure across the board that were offered by everyone. And so there's not currently a mechanism to carve out or exempt anybody from that. It applies consistently.
Stephanie Dirschno, Fairwinds Partners. We've noticed inconsistencies in the number of opportunities that a holder or an agent has had to correct its record before it has to resubmit the record entirely and pay the associated fees. And we've also noticed inconsistencies both in actually conducting it and in what we've heard from Deloitte on this. Do you have a final set official across the board idea of the number of times that this can occur before the record has to be resubmitted?
So thanks for that. In principle, there shouldn't be an inconsistency. That's incorrect. So if that is happening, then we will definitely immediately take a look at that. The guideline is one correction process, but we are trying to help everybody out and as much as we can. So in the event that we receive a customer support ticket with the trademark holder, trademark agent saying, please, we have the information, can you help us out? We try to facilitate that as much as we can. Also, for all the trademark records that are currently marked as on invalid, we are reaching out to them in August, to all the trademark holders and trademark agents, to see if we can help them again before September comes up, because we do believe that we're going to have a big rush in September, and we want everybody to be as much as aware of what's going on and how they can correct their information and get it right.
Thank you very much.
Emma de Abril, Core Association. This is for especially Vicky. I heard the same rumor that you said that Trademark Clearing House was not accepting IDNs. We asked it, we got the answer, that's it. The other rumor I heard, and I have spread myself, is that unfortunately TMCH is quite invisible in some areas like Middle East or, for Arabic scripts, Cyrillic script, and many other non-Latin scripts, perhaps with the exception of China and perhaps Japan, nearly everywhere else where non-Latin scripts are used. And this is worrying not only because of the nature of things and not only because we have three IDN TLDs, but because of the nature of the ICANN priority list. It will start, the sunrises will start precisely with these scripts. And I would like, whether you have concrete statistics, for instance, on which number of Arabic script, any language, be that Urdu or Arabic or Farsi or whatever, are in the TMCH. I would bet between 0 and 5. Or in Cyrillic, I would say between 0 and 20, in any Cyrillic script language, Russian or Belarus, whatever. The question is, a request to you and to ICANN to help organizing something to raise awareness about that in these areas. Because I repeat, they are the first one coming in time. They will be there in September, not September 2015. Okay? So we need to do something here.
Yes, thank you for that. And we are aware of that. So we are currently translating the clearinghouse guidelines in Arabic and other languages as well. We have our website set up to facilitate multiple languages, and we are working with a PR agency that has connections throughout the world as well to get news articles, press releases, and all that information out in different regions, specifically facilitating the IDNs so that people are aware of what's going on. But, of course, we also struggle with the fact that even though that we can make awareness about the trademark clearinghouse in those regions, they're not always aware about the new GTLD program as well. So we know that we're going to have to start again from scratch in those areas, and we will facilitate that in the next coming weeks.
We also have identified a couple of groups or individuals that we would like to work with in specific regions, like in Israel, like in the Middle East, like in China. To be honest, we're running as fast as we can. There was just a lot on our plate. And yes, we know that this is very important, and we will pay more attention to it. For instance, for South Africa, this week, we had our PR agency focusing on the press here. We've succeeded in having one or two articles in the local press to at least create some turbulence. Well, yeah, the world is big, so it's difficult to do it everywhere with the same pace, but we will definitely invest more in the next 2-3 months in those emerging markets.
Another question from remote participation, again from Connie Hahn. Many trademarks in themselves contain mixed script. Taking apart these trademarks to register them by script can sometimes render the trademark labeled generic or meaningless. Trademark Clearinghouse has mentioned that mixed script trademarks will not generate labels and therefore no protection may be rendered. Is this just a technicality that cannot be altered so as mixed scripts trademarks meaningful in their use of domain name registry?
Well, the answer to that question is basically what we have defined in the ICANN IDN guidelines. So basically in Section 5, it mentions that all code points in a single label will be taken from the same script as determined by the Unicode standard 24. So basically that's the answer. I mean, if maybe you want to read those guidelines, and in Section 5 it mentioned that specifically.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Gustavo. This is Karen. The answer to that lies in the DNS guidelines or requirements that are in place for second-level domain name labels, which have a sort of a general prohibition on mixed scripts within the same label. So while there are valid trademarks, certainly, where they contain different scripts, they would not translate, or according to transferring the mark to a domain name, it would not result in any legal domain name. In which case, there's really nothing to protect against, since no other registrant could possibly register that name either.
Thanks. There's a next question, which was from KOM, and it says, to avoid user confusion, some IDN GTLD applications, as part of their allocation plan, intend to reserve/allocate matching domains for existing current second-level ASCII GTLD registrations. How does this impact the trademark clearinghouse process? The guidebook isn't clear on this conflict.
So if I understand the question, it relates to a proposal that registrations, existing domain name registrations in a TLD could be given some priority in terms of registrations in a new TLD. That's not something that's provided for currently in the guidebook or any... as far as I'm aware, it hasn't been discussed much in terms of how that would work and so forth. So I think it's something that would need to be reviewed on what the actual details are and to fully respond.
Alex Mayerhofer, .at, and backend operator for a couple of TLDs. My question is, what are the administrative contractual requirements in order for us as a backend operator to get access to the OTNDN testing interfaces provided by IBM? So do our applicants need to sign a contract with TMCH before we can actually do integration testing? And the second very short question maybe to Gustavo is, what is the status of the internet drafts that we see out there? Are they final, so stable that we can really depend in our implementation on that, or are they going to change next couple of weeks? Both is actually timing issues.
Sorry, just to clarify, your first question was what administrative or contractual requirements are in place for access to the testing environment.
Right. Since we are not an applicant, we can't get into contract with TMCH ourselves. Yeah.
The contractual arrangement will exist between the registry and ICANN, and registry will pass on the passwords, the IDN passwords, to the backend operator.
Okay, so that means as a backend operator, I can't access the test environment before our applicants sign a contract with ICANN.
You will be able to access it based on the credentials provided by the registry.
Okay, thank you. And the second short point about the internet drafts?
So basically, regarding the draft, we have a lot of feedback from the community. Yep. This draft has been for a long time. I consider the draft stable. Basically, we have been using that draft to implement all the solution. But obviously, if we find something that is incorrect, we will fix it.
Okay.
My plan is, once we have the clean housing operations, maybe 4 months or 6 months after that, we will go to create an ROC based on the draft.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, John Berryhill. If I'm a trademark owner who hasn't been paying attention, and I find several months from now that new TLDs are launching, and some unauthorized party has submitted my trademark information to the trademark clearinghouse in order to qualify for Sunrise registrations and obtain unauthorized domain registrations, is there a mechanism for me as a trademark owner to remove an unauthorized entry from the trademark clearinghouse?
Well, first of all, there shouldn't be an unauthorized party.
Well, that's what they thought with domain registrations, too. But
I mean,
have an email address and I can sign a piece of paper, I can get an entry in the trademark clearinghouse and write a check.
No, it's not that easy.
Okay.
I think we are doing quite some validations and verifications on the authenticity of the person that submits a trademark. And there are a number of checks during previous sessions. We've gone into detail on that we do.
Okay.
Will it never happen? I assume not, no. But there is a process in place to dispute a decision made by the clearinghouse. That's correct.
Okay.
So you can go to the clearinghouse and dispute a certain decision that we've made. The question is obviously, how will you be aware of that? If you're not in the clearinghouse, let's say if you are also in the clearinghouse and you had a similar trademark, then you would know immediately as you would get claims on that specific trademark,
right,
if it would happen there during a claims period. If you're not already in the trademark clearinghouse, then probably you need external procedures to find out, which is not part of what we are required to do. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't know about the identity confirmation checks.
Yeah. Add to that, for the trademark record, when even third parties, when they submit on behalf of trademark holders, they always have to provide the private email address of the trademark holder, and we do sample checks as well on basis of different criteria to make sure that the trademark holder has indeed provided the authorization to the trademark agent to actually submit that trademark record as well.
So we have sent out emails to, if we felt that we couldn't identify the connection between the email address and the trademark owner, for instance, then we don't accept it. That's a general rule. And then we've already reached out to some of those to find out more, what are you doing? What we've seen, for instance, was that some of them try to register as a holder but act as an agent, and we've stopped
right.
that immediately. So we are doing our checks. We are actually thinking of even in further improving it with additional features where we would do potentially checks on identity cards based on an implement. But it was not required, so we're not doing it immediately, but we're really looking into that so that whenever we have doubt, we could potentially do additional verifications.
Okay. And so there's this check in each instance whether or not someone purporting
oh, yes.
to be an agent is actually an agent through some channel by
yes.
which you find the actual trademark holder.
Yeah. You may not know this. One of the first things that we do if any trademark holder or agent or any individual comes in is that we do a check with the OFAC list. So if we find matches there, then there is already not an immediate activation of that account.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, the next remote participant question from Connie Hahn, number 3. Could you specify who should certify translations in order for translations to be accepted by the Trademark Clearinghouse?
So a certified translation is normally by a certified translator. However, due to the fact that we are working with local resources that both understand both languages, it is sufficient to provide a translation from the agent, the trademark office, for example, or the trademark agent as well. I believe they can provide the translation as well, because we can actually make a match due to the fact that we have the correct people working on it based on the language.
Okay.
So the answer is not that it has to be like a certified translation as such. We believe that our resources, because of the fact that they're all native speakers for whatever language, should have the capacity to make that translation and make sure that it's a one-on-one. And again, with the recorrection process that we have set up, if we feel that it is not a one-on-one translation, then we will reach out. Now, second question you have to ask, where is it important? I mean, any description, for instance, of goods or services should be an exact match with whatever supporting documentation that we have. If agents or specific parties wish to also include, for instance, a description in English, a translation in English, because they know that potentially the registry might not be capable of, the registrar might not be capable of doing all of these translations, then we're obviously not going to be that strict on, the translation needs to be the same. But what is most important for that specific record is that whatever, in whatever script the goods and services are, that it is an absolute exact match with any supporting documentation that we need to verify against.
Great, thank you. Here's the next remote participation from Christopher NIEMI. For proof of use in regards to figurative marks, does the proof of use sample have to show an exact match of the full mark, i.e. colors, graphics, or can the proof of use show the primary words and characters in the mark?
The proof of use, because we know in some cases it's not possible to provide if it's a figurative mark because of the, depending on the proof of use that they're providing, that it can be a brochure where it's just the trademark as a word mark is mentioned. So in those cases, we do accept those cases. But we do look at first to see if we can find the figurative mark.
Great, thank you. This one is from Lucy, S-E-U-F-I-E-R. How does Deloitte know the decision is not being appealed when you were talking about... when you were talking about court cases, this question came up, and it says, how does Deloitte know the decision is not being appealed?
To be honest, we don't. At that moment, we do the verification on the basis of the information provided. If that third party is in an appeal... And as soon as the appeal has been, a decision has been made, then they can always file a dispute against our decision based on the appeal.
We obviously do some checks again on that documentation around, if it comes from a court case, then our local people need to obviously recognize the court as such. So it can't be just something that has been made up.
Michael Heller, lawyer in Germany. Just a question of clarification of the plus 50. If my client has registered his trademark in 10 different countries, can he apply for a plus 500? 10 times plus 50.
In principle, if you would have registered the same trademark in multiple jurisdictions, then you could submit it each time for that jurisdiction and have 50. That is a possibility, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Alex Meyerhofer, .at. My question is regarding integration testing with the TMCH. As a backend operator, do I need to repeat integration testing for each and every TLD I'm operating, or do I have to pass once as a backend operator and then I'm certified for all the GTLDs that I'm operating?
No, you do not have to repeat yourself over and over again. Once you have gone
Perfect.
Through the process, you're ready to go.
Thank you.
The next two remote participation questions. This one's from Connie Hahn. Is the OTE environment ready? Since its release 2 weeks ago, the Trademark Clearinghouse agents have not been able to access it yet.
So the OTE environment for agents accessing the Trademark Clearinghouse has been made available, and we have multiple users already on the system. So then if there is something that it, for some reason it's not connecting then they just need to create a customer support ticket, and we will look into it immediately.
Thanks. This one is from Ching CHIAO from .Asia. Does early bird trademark submission end on August 9th as well, or does it end in September this year?
It will end when the first GTLD actually launches at Sunrise.
Okay. The next question from Thomas Arlens. Who will receive a notification once a domain name has been registered in a Sunrise?
So the notifications are sent either to the trademark holder or trademark agent, depending on who contracted with the clearinghouse. If it's an agent, they have to submit it to their holders. If a holder went directly, then they receive the notifications from our side.
Hi, Jim Singh. This is in reference to the discussion that's been made prior about mixed script in the acceptance of mixed script. It's true in the guidebook, it says that all code points in a single label will be taken from the same script as determined by the Unicode standard NX 24. But it's also written in the guidebook that the second label is supposed to be implemented under the ICANN implementation, and that is not a complete statement. There are exceptions to the rules, and the rules allow mixed scripts in the second label. So you do need to look at your implementation to allow mixed script in certain cases, especially like Chinese and Japanese.
Thank you, James. So you're correct. There are exceptions noted in the guidelines, and I was speaking to the general case, but you're correct that there's a specific notation that there are certain cases where there are exceptions permitted to that, where there are sort of established rules around how those are used. So we've given the full IDN guidelines to our partners, Deloitte and IBM, with that as the basis of implementation.
There are five more remote participation questions. The next one is, could you please let us know how many registrars are implementing or plan to implement the claims process?
How many registrars plan to implement the claims process? Well, I don't know. Registrars who wish to support new GTLDs and to provide those services to registrants who want to register during the early startup periods of a TLD, I would think would be interested in that.
Thank you. The next one is from Benny Samuelson. Question. As revealed yesterday, the trademark 50-plus will be delayed and increasing costs. How will this affect the first TLDs going live with Sunrise?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Sure. As revealed yesterday, the trademark 50-plus will be delayed and there's increasing costs. How will this affect the first TLDs going live with Sunrise?
So this shouldn't affect anybody from going live with Sunrise at all. First of all, plus 50 additional labels only applies to the trademark claims process, not to Sunrise. So that should not be a delay. Additionally, it's not intended in any case that implementation of the of that functionality would be a delaying factor to any TLD from going live.
Great. This is one from Maxim. Will it be possible to transfer client cases between IBM, Deloitte, and ICANN? And it says parentheses, it happens. But I don't understand what it meant by client cases.
Thank you, Carol. I believe what the question relates to is what Audrey was describing in terms of the service desks. A user of the system who has a question may have directed it to any of the three of us. So the question was, Audrey went through how we're coordinating with each other to make sure that we are covering, the whole range of questions is covered by someone, first of all. Secondly, that we have mechanisms so that if as the question alludes to, someone a critical question ends up in the wrong place, that it doesn't get dropped or lost, that we have communications channels in place to make sure that it does get routed to the right place.
Yeah, just to add, the case will be redirected, and each individual service desk, to avoid ghost support questions, will close the thing. We will try to communicate with the end user to make sure that they are redirected properly, and that the other desk will be informed as well. So that's the process we're currently looking into, ensure that we all have the right information at the right time, and the client is supported as good as we can.
Great. Thanks. And then this one was from Tom and Lentz, and I think it's tied. It said, wouldn't it be better to implement one customer service center where experts from the three parties will work together for their customers' benefit?
Yes, sure. If that would be possible, yes, we obviously would have done that. We obviously are a couple of large organizations trying to cooperate as good as we can. And if we see feasibilities to implement that, we will sure do. But currently, that is not the case. And as we need to use the cheapest possible support part to keep it all affordable, we're trying to align the service desk as best as we can at this moment in time.
Great. Thank you. The other one is the same related question. So that's all I have. Dennis, is there another?
All right. I think we have, okay, two more questions, and then we'll close to get ready for the next session.
This question is from Lucas Ball, and it's for Karen. Is there anything that stops a registry operator to charge $1 million a domain during the TMCH sunrise, and then implementing another sunrise and charge $10, thus rendering that TMCH sunrise useless in practice?
None of ICANN's agreements with the registries have any regulation in terms of pricing. The registries, I think, are expected to assess that with relation to their target market, the services that they're offering, et cetera. But there's no stipulations from ICANN on charging.
Yeah. Last question from Angus Richardson. Could we please have more color rendering regarding the prioritization of trademark records by regional GTLDs?
Sorry, the question, can we have more what?
More color.
More color?
Yeah, regarding the prioritization of trademark records by regional GTLDs.
Sure. So that was a point that I mentioned in relation to the RPM requirements for how registries implement the sunrise and claims processes. There was interest from some applicants in that had a regional or a local or a particular geographical focus in allocating the domain names in the sunrise according to those that were closest to the region or had ties there. The clearinghouse verification process provides verification that an entity has met the sunrise requirements. There may be many. And this happens in any registry, there may be many eligible rights holders who want the same domain name. And so in that case, all registries would have allocation processes. So the proposal was around the ability of the registry operator to establish a priority, a prioritization in the allocation in relation to the purpose and focus of the TLD. All right. I'd like to thank everybody for spending their 2 hours of lunch hour here with us. The next session will be the URS demonstration in about 15 minutes. Thanks.